Welcome to the PBT podcast. I'm Dan Feldman. I'm one of the few people who believe that Most Improved Player is a good award. I'm a little bit tired of everybody complaining about how hard it is to figure out what to do with second players, what type of player should get it. I think it's nice to value improvement. My only quibble with the award, it only rewards a single year leap, which is nice to honor. That's why I like the award. But I think we should do more. I think we should look at the players who improve year over year, who make maybe a big leap in 1 year, subtle improvements in other years, but just keep improving, who aren't stagnant in their games. So I created this award, want to give it out annually. It's called Utmost Improved Player. If anything needs improvement, it's the name of that. We're going with Utmost Improved Player now. And I want to talk about the players who improve the most year over year. And there's nobody better to do that with in NBA media than an actual player development coach. I'm very pleased to be joined by David Thorpe today. David, how are you doing?
Fantastic. And yes, this is a subject that's near and dear to my heart because it's what we focus on all the time with the players we work with.
So I asked David to come up with a list of the players, the five players he thinks has improved the most over their careers since their rookie year. I did the same. We're going to compare lists. The only ground rule for this, you know, you can go up and down. It's just where you started to where you're now. The only ground rule I wanted to do is you have to be at your career high now. You have to be having a career year now because this is something I want to look at every single year. And so, you know, I don't want to say, well, LeBron improved the most of his career because he reached such a high level, but he's like back down to earth now. I want to get some new names in here. So to get this, you have to be having a career year at this point. So let's just jump into it, comparing lists. David, who did you have number five on your list of the player who improved the most from his rookie season until this season?
Well, I didn't really focus on one through five, but I can give a pretty good guess for it. But I will say that, let me start off by this. Improving in a vacuum is not something that interests me the most. So what I mean by that, Dan, is the guys that have pushed through from being bad to elite or from pretty good to elite, which is the case of one of my guys, I give that – it's harder to do. So if you were terrible and you become a solid player, fantastic. I recognize that. But if you've gone from solid to spectacular, or in some cases I've got not really guys you were sure would make it into spectacular, of course they're going to rank higher. But those, the solid to spectacular is more impressive to me than terrible to solid. Does that make sense?
Yes, and I agree. I'm curious how we're listening to compare, because I think I do maybe give it sounds slightly more credit in my mind from, you know, bad to solid. But I definitely agree that leap in that top range is much harder to do. And so, yeah, it skews that direction for sure.
All right. So I guess I'll start with this guy at number five, because he's become he's an enigmatic player, and he is someone that I still don't know that I trust to be a lead guard, as opposed to a Jamal Crawford, Lou Williams, sixth man of the year, perennial winner. But there's no questioning he's one of the most exciting and most talented players. And I wasn't sure he was really going to stick because I just don't think he played very intelligently. And that's Zach LaVine. Yep. So Zach was an incredible athlete. I watched him a lot his rookie season. I watched every game he played his rookie season. And he was just a terrible decision maker. No big deal. He was 19 years old, I think. And I didn't know if he's going to make it, because you can't just be an athlete. You've got to really become a hell of a shooter if you're not a great decision maker. And if you're going to be a primary ball handler and you're not a good decision maker, well, you better just be an amazing scorer. Well, that isn't so easy to do, but he's done it, right? I would think you'd agree he's having a career season. Of course, his injuries have made a difference, but he's an amazing talent. I don't know yet. I still don't know yet where he's going to best be served. As I said, is he the sixth man of the year for five straight years? Is he someone you can play with Chris Paul and not have him dominate the ball, quite a Chris Paul type? And therefore you lessen his decision making issues, which are improved, of course, and just turn him loose, because he might be the best shooter in the world that has that kind of athleticism. So think about that. He's that talented of a combination of athlete, scorer, shooter. And so he still leaves some things to be desired on the defensive end, but I think he's worthy of someone that we have to recognize because he's in the conversation of one of the most exciting offensive players in the league. And I don't know that I don't think it was definitely the case when he was a rookie.
I had Zach LaVine third on my list. I'm so high on his improvement. One of the big reasons is his rookie year. I think maybe you're even underselling how bad it was. He was so destructive. One of the most destructive players I've seen. And that's not all his fault, right? If you ask a young rookie shooting guard to be your starting point guard, he's probably going to be pretty terrible. And Zach LaVine was. I do think that was good for his career, though. I think the lessons he learned of court vision, of passing, it's not like he's great at those things now. But I do think he became better because of that season, having to play point guard now that he's at shooting guard. I think he also has room to, like, if we redo this list in a year or two, I think he has room to go up even further. Because like you said, I don't know if this was supposed to be a backhanded compliment, but it sounded to me a little bit like a backhanded compliment. Oh, he's the most athletic, like, or the best shooter of somebody that great athlete. It's a compliment to his shooting. I think his all-around game could be better. He has the athleticism to do more defensively, to rebound better, like to do other things, to drive better even, to do things other than just being a shooter. But, man, it's hard to complain about these things as much because he's become such a good shooter.
Well, you mentioned it. He was – so I use dunksandthrees.com mostly for my defensive stuff. It's we're told by NBA analysts that – it's the best website out there for evaluating a player. And so if you look back in the 2015 season with Minnesota, he ranked in the third percentile, which means 97% of the league was better than him defensively. He's up to 44, which is probably it's the best he's if he stays there, it's the best he'll ever finish. He was at the 43rd percentile last year, but 97th percentile on offense. So you're right. Of course he can get better because he can improve to be at least an average defender. He's still ranked the 95th percentile in the overall, what they call estimated plus minus. So, yes, I think he can get better. How much better? You know, I don't think he'll ever be above probably 50 percentile in defense. But if he does that, he's probably in the top 3 percentile in the league, which is an incredible improvement considering he was in the bottom 10% his rookie season. So, yeah, either way, you know he can be the leading scorer of a decent team. I actually think he can be the leading scorer of an elite team. He'll just need more help on the defensive side for that team to be elite.
So, number five on my list is C.J. McCollum.
He was my honorable mention, just so you know. He was my number six. I was just going to say that if you had me go next,
C.J. McCollum, he won Most Improved Player in 2016. That's when he made his big leap. You know, really came into his own as an NBA player after, you know, being more of a deep reserve as a rookie and low-end rotation player the next year. And really came to his own as a good NBA starter. And I think this is his best season since then. It was a hard level for him to sustain. But now I think the thing he's done best is reorienting his perimeter shot selection, taking more three-pointers, a higher efficiency shot. And he's making them at a very high clip, almost 40%. He's doing a little bit more playmaking. He's so good at avoiding turnovers, but now he's doing that while just being a little more comfortable distributing the ball. So I don't think he's way better than the, you know, his, I got to correct myself. He won in 2015-16. It was Most Improved Player. It was the next year that he was even better. That was probably his peak year until this season. I think he's only a little bit better than that. That's enough to qualify him, where you have one year where you win Most Improved Player. You have another year right after that where you improve a good amount. And then you follow that up with even more improvement a few years later. Like, that's the type of year-over-year improvement that I really want to value in this.
Yeah, so again, I had him an honorable mention, and to me, it was flipping a coin, which I just did as we were speaking, because I really wasn't sure if I was going to put him or Zach in that five slot. And CJ he was really cooking. There was a period of time this year where he definitely would have been in my top three, because he had made such a jump. He's not defending the way I'd like him to. He has gotten a little better at offense. He is having a career year. It's marginal. But we need to respect, you know, what he's done for sure. He's and Portland's starting to play better again. I like to look at how a team's doing as part of this, you know, the context of all of this. So he's, again, finished sixth for me, fifth for you. That means we're right on track.
You know, the defense, he could be a little better, but the big difference I see between him and LaVine is, you know, Levine has the athleticism, is younger, probably a little better size. Like I look at, you know, McCollum could defend a little better, but I'm not holding out hope that all of a sudden he becomes a better defender. I think Levine, I'm not sure Levine's ever become a great defender or anything, but I see a lot more upside with Levine's defense.
Yeah. All right. You want me to get me my number four?
Real quick, before we do that,
yeah,
I want to talk about the difference between why we have Levine a little higher, a little lower. So one thing I look at is try and find a balance between impact and skills, right? Sometimes guys become more skilled, but they're not impacting the game quite as much because they're leaning on things that don't change the game quite as much. So I look at Levine and McCollum. McCollum was basically a zero his rookie year. He didn't do much. He didn't play much. That's not good or anything. But Levine was actively destructive. And so I hold that, you know, as him improving from a lower place where he was, you know, again, I don't really blame Levine for this. He was put out of position in too big of a role, but his impact is way higher because he was destructive. Are you looking more at impact skills, trying to find a balance?
Well, first of all, was Zach Levine with Sam Mitchell as a rookie? Was that the year Sam was there?
Let's see. It was 2014-15. That was Flip Saunders' year.
Was it Flip? Okay.
Yeah.
What you said is right. At least CJ guarded as a rookie.
Mm-hmm.
Zach did not. Zach was he was a mess. He was a talented mess. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he's matured a lot. You know, I think something that I really want to, well, one of the things I really want to stress is that none of this is scripted. That it's great if you're super athletic. It's great if you've got great skill. It's great if you love to work. But there's just so many stories in the league where, and I witness this because I pay attention to this kind of stuff, where a player who we think is going to make it just doesn't make it. There is nothing automatic. Nothing's given. And so for Zach to go from CJ too, from where they were to where they are, is hard. If everyone could do it, I always tell people this all the time. If everyone could improve the same, none of you would make any money because they'd all be improving the same. It's a hard sport to master. And the challenge is to finally be able to figure things out mentally before your body breaks down because it's such a hard game to play athletically. And so for Zach to get where he is, and CJ too, gifted very differently, is amazing. I'm not great at really ranking who is more impressive than whom in that situation. They're both right there for me. And Zach was more of a mess as a rookie than CJ for sure.
All right. So in the spirit of you not wanting to exactly rank these, let's go to your number four.
Yeah. It's not that I don't want to, it's just, I don't probably sweat the details as much as you do.
Sure.
So I'm a little bit partial to big men. I think it's even harder for them because teams quit on them so fast. So I've got three big men I'm going to leave for my top three. And so my number four is going to be the other guard I have besides CJ and Zach, and that's Fred VanVleet.
Wow.
And I like Fred for, first of all, it's amazing that he was undrafted. So that already you're dealing with an enormous challenge. It is, as someone who's been coaching for a long, long time, and for many years I did, you probably know, I did a lot of pre-draft stuff. And I one year I had six guys drafted out of 15, which means nine didn't get drafted. And they all didn't expect to. All nine of them didn't expect to get drafted. But it's a painful experience. And more painful is it for their coach and their agent who know already their chances of making the NBA are much, much lower. And I'm lucky enough to have coached a number of guys who went undrafted and did well in the NBA, winning championships and everything, but they are the exception. They are not the rule. So for VanVleet to get to where he is now is extraordinary. He's in the 96th percentile in estimated plus minus at dunks and threes. He was in the 16th percentile as a rookie in Toronto. Last year was an amazing season for him. I think he's mildly topped it this year. He's probably the best guard in the league with the usage rate that he has. And one of the reasons, because it's not very high, one of the reasons why I like him so much, Dan, is he filled a role when they won a championship. His role increased a little bit last year, and he had a career year. And somehow this season, with all that's gone on in Toronto, the mess, listen, they play 30 minutes from my house. It is not a bad place to live in the winter. My air conditioning has been on for a month already. It's a beautiful area of Tampa Bay, the Tampa Bay area, downtown Tampa, but it's not their home. And then the COVID issues and Kyle Lowry being out. And yet Van Vliet was able to just a little bit, just marginally play better than he did the year before when things were moving at a better clip for the franchise. I give him credit for that. He's become this terrific player. Of course, he's improved at every level. Offensively, he's an unbelievable on-ball defender. I don't know that anyone ever predicted he would score as much as he's scoring this year, which is, I think, you know, basically 20 points a game. He averaged 2.9 as a rookie. He's just a marvelous player. And that jump from last year to go even a little bit better this year is so hard to do. And I'll finish with this, Dan. Daryl Morey once told me that it's almost impossible for a guy who's an 86% free throw shooter to improve on it like 2 years in a row. It's already so good. Well, I feel the same way about what Fred did last season. It's almost impossible to improve upon what he did last year. And it's in the climate that he had this year in Toronto to still do that, well, in Tampa, is marvelous to me. That's why I put him at number four.
I love Fred Van Vliet. One of my favorite interviews I've ever done. And one of the things he said to me was when he went undrafted, he was not daunted because he just went to workouts, so many workouts, and just, you know, dominated. He, in his words, you know, the guys who did get drafted, he was like, oh, of course I fit in this league. I'm not worried. And I just love that attitude. And you see it from him year after year. He's improved his free throw percentage every year. That was an interesting stat you brought
up.
That's
amazing.
He was at 81.8% as a rookie the year he was barely playing. And now it's up to 88.5. Improved every year. The only reason he didn't crack my list is because I made a slightly different assessment than you, that he was marginally better last season. I think a lot of that's contextual, like you said, playing in this miserable season the Raptors are having. A lot of his structure is better, or at least in some ways. His three-point shooting's down just a little bit. I think that reduces his impact. It was probably not something where, oh, he's doing worse. But I do think the overall performance because of that is just so slightly worse that I didn't consider him, in my mind, eligible for this. If I did, yeah, he'd absolutely deserve it. He was barely in the league as a rookie, became a good bench player, and that seemed great. And now he's a good starter right there as somebody who deserves it to me. Number four on my list. And by the way, if you're going all big men, that means you're not going to have the player I have number one. So I'm excited to talk about that.
Yeah.
I'm guessing we have something in common here, though. Number four on my list is Nikola Jokic. Jokic, I think, was underrated as a rookie. He finished third in Rookie of the Year voting to Karl Anthony Towns. I think he should have finished second ahead of Kristaps Porzingis. Of course, not playing in New York obviously hurts your case there, for at least for getting votes. But Jokic has become so much better. As underrated as he was as a rookie, he's become so much better. He's going to win MVP, it seems. He is so much more assertive offensively. That was a big thing he was such a willing passer early in his career. He didn't take the shots he should have. He's doing that now. It makes him a better player for his team. It's not selfish in any way because he's the best passing center of all time. He started off as a good passer, but has even surpassed that. As he's gotten into better shape, he has defended better. He's expanded his shooting range to be even better from beyond the arc. Just a remarkable improvement. Who would have thought this guy would be winning MVP when I was being like, yeah, he's slightly ahead of Kristaps Porzingis as a rookie. And I thought, you know, Porzingis had the higher ceiling. Jokic just maybe happened to be a little better coming into the league. No, Jokic had that high ceiling too. We just couldn't see it. And he's done everything he could to maximize it.
Yeah, I had him number two on my list. So what he's done is phenomenal. And he's the runaway MVP. It should be unanimous, in my opinion. I don't think anyone's close to him. In fact, the only one I would even put – no, the guy I have number one on this list is probably not going to get MVP votes. He should. But no one's going to touch Jokic. And as he's earned it. I mean, when he was a rookie, they had Yusuf Nurkic. Mm-hmm. Who really looked very good. Mm-hmm. And there was no guarantee Jokic was even going to start in the league. So, I mean, he was good as a rookie. He's the guy. He's the example of someone who's pretty solid as a rookie, and now he's spectacular. Yeah. So again, this is just not scripted. It's hard to do what these guys are doing, and he kind of symbolizes where this league is going. There's two different ways to be a big in this league. The next two names I'll mention. Jokic is two. My number three is, and then my number one are examples of the other kind of big. Jokic is the symbol of the skilled big that doesn't have to be a great athlete to be able to play, and in this case, dominate. He's so skilled in everything. So I give the Nuggets credit too for putting the ball in his hands the way they have. Right. It doesn't matter how good he is with the ball if he doesn't get a chance to show it and you don't build a system around him. That's why I feel like, Dan, I feel like there are some players, Russell Westbrook is one example. You would know the examples. It's not just him, where no matter where they go, whatever system it is, whatever the roster looks like, whatever the coaching strategies are, they're going to be elite. They just overwhelm you with talent, athleticism, skill, attitude, disposition, whatever. Then there's the players that I think need a system and need a roster. Tim Duncan is an example of that for me. People thought that he did everything for the Spurs. I don't agree. I saw him play a lot in college. I think the Spurs helped him a ton. I think Jokic is another example. If you put Jokic with James Harden, you would never see this Jokic. Nothing against James Harden, but you would never see this Jokic. And so having this system allows us to see all of his gifts, and the fact that he's able to do it at the level he's doing at is remarkable considering where he was as a rookie.
You wouldn't see that Jokic, not because he didn't have the talent, but because that wasn't his mentality. That was the turning point in his career, was when the Nuggets finally convinced him, hey, you've got to shoot a lot more. Like, you're such a good scorer. And obviously he's an even better passer on top of that. I'm glad you brought up Nurkic. Yeah, there was a dispute that, like, Jokic's rookie year, because Nurkic had just had a really good rookie year.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, who can they play together? If you got to pick one, who are you going to pick? And, Jokic made that a hard choice, because he even, like, I think the Nuggets were content with Nurkic, right? They had a good young center. And Jokic came in and surpassed that. And I think there was a little bit of a shock of, wow, like, we were not, like, who could have expected that? And they obviously made the right choice. And Nurkic is a solid NBA player too. Denver obviously made the right choice. I want to jump to your number three player.
Yeah. Number three, because right? Jokic is two for me. Yeah. So
I'm guessing your number three is going to be my number two, but who do you got?
I don't know. Who knows? Because there's an argument for my number three that this isn't his career year. I think that it is. And again, I look at context. So my number three is Clint Capela.
Wow. Okay. And you're gonna have my 1-2 are not gonna make your list.
So the reason why is he was terrific in Houston in a very, very, very tight role. And I loved him as a rookie. I think I even tweeted that he was the steal of the draft. He didn't do a lot. Don't get me wrong. He was bottom 10% in the league, but I could see the talent. And then with Harden, he just played the dunk spot, and wasn't really a rim protector. He grew into one to some degree, and now he's a monster. Monster. He won't be all NBA because there's just three guys way better than him at center, but he might be the fourth best center in the league. And if you watch him play, you would think he's left-handed because his left-hand hook is dynamite. He finishes everything at the rim. He's always been great at the field goal percentage. But the difference is now he's creating shots for himself sometimes and not just depending on a teammate giving the ball. And so even though his numbers might be down a little bit, the quality of the shot has gone way down. Trae Young's great. He ain't James Harden. So for him to be right around 60% for effective field goal percentage, given that he doesn't just get all dunks anymore, is amazing. He's playing the best defense of his career. You could argue it's a lot or just a little bit better. It's definitely better. He is the best offensive rebounder he's ever been. He is a monster on the glass. I would argue he's the best defensive rebounder he's ever been if you look at advanced metrics. He's the best shot blocker probably he's ever been, or very close to it. So all of these incremental improvements, when asked to do so much more, is so remarkably hard. And I again, big men who push that envelope, just really, it's harder for them. The ball isn't in their hands as much. And when it is, it tends to be more crowded. So if you watch tape on Capella and you see him just bully ball guys to get left-handed buckets, and then he dunks everything still. I think it's an amazing thing to see.
He barely played as a rookie. Spent a lot of time in the then D League. Second year, I think, made a remarkable improvement. The Rockets, it was 2015-16, his second year. The Rockets had a real slow start as when they had Harden and Dwight Howard. And seemed like things were going amiss, and he was the biggest bright spot in Houston. Got even better his third year. And then this is why he didn't crack my list, because I think he peaked in his fourth year. Now, if you want to say this year is better, I'm not going to argue too much. Like, I think it's very, very close. But here's my argument for why he peaked a little bit earlier. It's because as much as he's expanded his game offensively and can do things without being set up, has that interior low post game, that he has more tools now, his usage percentage in 2018 was 19.4%. This year it's 19.9%. If you're so much better at creating those shots, you got to get that usage rate up a little more. I think we need to give more credit overall. I mean, it applies to Capella too, but more credit to the guys who set screen after screen and roll and make themselves available for those passes. I think he did so much to maximize that role of being the finisher in those James Harden pick and rolls back in 2018. He had a much higher true shooting percentage then, 65% to 60 now, and that was in a league that wasn't quite as offensive oriented. It is now still very offensive oriented in league's history, but where it is now is just off the charts. And so, yeah, you're absolutely right. Better defender, better rebounder. I think more skilled. This is probably where we get a little bit into the impact versus skills debate. I think he's more skilled now. I think his impact was slightly higher in 2018, but I also wouldn't be surprised one bit if he comes back next year and combines the more skills, especially being better defensively, and then has that impact next year where he cracks my list next year. But the only reason I didn't have him on, if I did, he would have been in my top five or so. Like, he would have been right up there, because I thought he was just slightly better in 2018.
Yeah, no, I get it. I looked at the same thing, but again, that's what I was looking at context. And I thought of it like this. If this Clint Capella was on those Rockets teams, he would even have better numbers. He's definitely improved. Of course I look at metrics. I always use my eyes first. Well, I shouldn't say this. I normally use my eyes first and then try to verify it, because I could be wrong too. Especially if you're watching a game here and there, I follow all the teams, so I can't see everything. There are times I'll notice a metric and say, I need to watch this player more. But when I see Clint play, he's so much better than he was in those Houston years. It was easier. It was just easier to play then. Than the way the Hawks play. And, I actually am friends with Lloyd Pierce. I like him. That coaching change has had an impact on him. Atlanta is coming, right? Atlanta is, where are they going to be, a fourth seed, you think?
That 4-5 Hawks-Knicks series is looking good.
Yeah, right. It's right. 4-5, one or the other. So, and he's just a more impactful player than he was for Houston. But, yeah, so I'm curious now. I want to hear because you already know my number two. Let's hear your three and two, because I don't have them on my list.
Well, so my three was LaVine way back from the beginning. I guess it's possible your number two is my number one. My number two is Julius Randle. Is that who you have number one?
No.
Okay, great. Julius Randle, he missed nearly all his rookie year with injury. So I think it requires – look, his impact was zero. And then as far as his skills – a little bit of estimation, but he was not really good his second year either. He averaged a double-double, which is something, right? You're a young player, you're putting up numbers. That's something. He was incredibly inefficient. His defense wasn't there. Byron Scott was very, very hard on him. That probably didn't help. It wasn't, but, I think where he is now is leaps and bounds ahead. Definitely a career year. First-time All-Star. Solid chance to make an All-NBA team. He is just the hub of the Knicks offense. I think the Knicks would be completely lost without him. He doesn't really get to the rim anymore, probably something to do with the Knicks spacing, but he has become such a good shooter. He's reliable from mid-range on three-pointers. He can shoot off the dribble in a way that few bigs can. He's holding up defensively in Tom Thibodeau's system, which is not nothing. I just think leaps and bounds from where he was as a young player. And it, all the improvement didn't come this year. And I think he kind of has an overstated case for most improved player, just the regular award, because people are going to compare him to last year, which is a real down year for him. He was better the couple years before that. But, you know, you look at that as the big one of the big leaps, the second big leap coming to this year. So if you're looking at the whole career, I think he's number two on my list. It's just somebody who's improved by leaps and bounds. And the one knock is I'm not so sure the shooting is sustainable, but he's making them now, and then maybe I'm putting too much trust into it.
So I will apologize. I am super biased in this case. I love Julius Randle from day one. And always felt like his franchise were letting him down, not that he was letting them down. So he's very deserving of being on this list. When I was looking at CJ as my honorable mention, there were only two names written down. So I don't know who you're going to mention next, because I know my most improved and I feel very good about it. But Julius is I just love him. I didn't understand why franchises didn't love him more. His motor is so hot. He's so skilled, and yeah, he maybe won't shoot 41% next year from three, but there's no reason to think he's not going to be a good shooter. I don't have that worry. I think that he found, you know, I don't think Tibbs is the easiest guy to play for. Jimmy Butler loved playing for him. This guy does too. It's a perfect fit. It really is. That doesn't mean Julius can't do this for another coach, but there are 10 coaches he could probably do this for whatever reason. The heart, and I mean, come on, he's the face of probably a top four seed franchise in the East. It's the Knicks. And, you know, when people keep expecting him to kind of fall off and he just never does, that's pretty damn impressive to me. So, yeah, I mean, he's probably deserving of it. I just always thought this was in him. And I remember talking to a Laker player. And I said, who do you like better, D'Angelo Russell or Julius? I want to say they were together. I don't know if they were rookies together, but they were young players together. And he liked D'Angelo better. He thought Julius was a little stuck on himself and a little kind of lazy off the court. And I said, I don't see that on the court. He's just a hot motor guy with skill and brawn. He's strong. And my player wasn't wrong about Russell. He became a heck of a player. He wasn't good that it was when he was a rookie when we had this conversation. But I feel like I've always seen Julius as in that role, and I'm wrong because you're right. Julius has improved that much. I just feel like to me this isn't a surprise. Whereas with CJ, I didn't see this coming with CJ. I didn't see this coming with Clint. I didn't see this coming with Zach. So I kind of use my own bias on that. I've always felt like Julius should be. In fact, I think someone sent me this tweet a few weeks ago. I tweeted out Julius Randle's rookie year. If he's not a multiple-time All-Star, something's wrong. Like that's what I thought about him. And he's doing exactly what I expected.
That's one of the things I love about the most improved player debates is, you know, because especially with like somebody who's like rooting for a team, like, oh, this guy's got to win most improved player. Like, you got to look at him like this. And all you have to say is like, oh, I was actually higher on him before. Like, why didn't you believe in him? What's wrong with you? What's, you know, obviously I'm not partisan to Julius Randle. I'm not going to be offended by that. But yeah, I did not see this coming the same way. I was more down on him. I would have thought if you told me going into this year, if you described to me what his role offensively with the Knicks was going to be, I would have thought it'd be a disaster. I would have thought that would be him hijacking the offense. But it's not. He's improved so much as a passer.
Yeah.
He's making these mid-range, these perimeter shots. Like, I mean, just having seen him play in these previous years, you're telling me Julius Randle's not getting to the rim anymore because he's just going to hang out on the perimeter and take a bunch of jumpers and dribble the ball a ton? But he's making it work. He is so good in this role. And better than ever defensively, too.
For sure better defensively. Yeah, he ranks 89th percentile in defense right now and on dunks and threes. And that's not nothing. That's like if you're top 15%, you've done a lot. And he's not super athletic. He's not super tall. He's not super long. He's pretty long. He's not a rim protector. And so what that means is he's defending with purpose and with a plan, following the strategy. If you don't follow the plan, it will show in your numbers defensively. It doesn't matter how athletic you are, how many steals and block shots you get, you are going to be exposed. Defense is about five guys playing in a connected way. We talk about tying a rope to their feet, and they're all connected. One guy moves one way, it's pulling everyone else to another spot. And so he's doing that. He's not, you know, going off on his own. So, he's probably going to win most improved. I think there's a political aspect to that, or just a fan aspect, but I don't care. I don't really care who wins these awards. I recognize that what they've done, and whoever wins, so be it.
Can I make a guess at your number one?
If you get this, I'm going to be very impressed, but yeah.
Joel Embiid.
No.
Ah, wow. Okay. All right.
No, but yeah, you're not stupid. You're not stupid. What Joel has done, I wrote about this last week, actually, at True Hoop. I wrote about he's always been like Shaq and Hakeem Olajuwon, in that he has a disposition to dominate. He has all the pivot and fake game, where he can just really get you off balance. Even when you initially are on balance to guard him, he makes you think you're going to shoot it, and then uses fakes and pivots to create angles to score or get fouled, which is why he leads the league in free throws. And now he's added like a Dirk Nowitzki aspect to his game. He makes a bunch of jumpers. It's ridiculous. It's unfair. And for a man that size, it's amazing.
Making those free throws at 86% now, like when you're drawing them at that rate, that's a huge bump. I mean, I had him somewhere in the 6 to 10 range. That was my highest ranked big man left. So, if it's not Joel Embiid, you got to tell me. Who's your number
one? All right. I'm going to make a very passionate case for this, because I don't think he's on your list. This is a team that I've watched every game this year, because they are the best team in the league, and I didn't see it coming. I thought they'd be good. I thought they'd be top four, top five. I did not think they'd be number one. It's the Utah Jazz. And Rudy Gobert is deserving MVP votes this year. It is what he is doing for the best team in the league is incredible. Durability matters. You know, that counts for stuff. If you watch them play, you know they're a pick and roll offensive game, right? And his job is to roll hard typically. There's no popping for him. When he does pop, he's a dribble handoff guy. Okay, so he's looking to get other people the ball and then roll, right? He won't ever shoot the ball. He has gotten so much better at tiptoeing through the paint to score, whether it's a craft finish or a dunk. Both are better than he's ever done before in traffic. He is relentless on the offensive glass still. That is amazing. To lead the league in block shots and dunks, block shots, he always leads in dunks, and rebounds, incredibly hard to do. And so, and the Jazz, they've always built their defense around him. They did not play well on defense last year. They're back to being a top five defense, top three defense this year. It's not all because of him, of course, but they'd have to change their strategy completely. You probably feel like this isn't his career year. I get that. But again, when I look at context, he's right on the cusp of having his, and you could argue a PER, whatever, is his best season, but to do it on the best team in the world is just that much harder to do. And I'll remind you that they're still number one seed overall. And Mitchell and Conley have missed a combined, I think, 36 games. And yet he has done so much of the work on both ends. Always a great screen setter. That is a surprise. But his feel for what to do, his feel for double teams when he gets doubled. They're switching on defense more, Dan. And he is they're doing a little bit less now than they were earlier this year. I actually think they're trying to relieve – they're doing two things. They're relieving some pressure from him because they're trying to save him for the postseason. And they do still have little guys. So, like, for example, before Mike Conley went out, they don't like switching with Mike because he gets so exposed. So Rudy will drop, or he'll show and recover. He's doing so expertly. When he does switch on the guards, I've watched him lock down a number of dynamic ball handlers in one-on-one. That doesn't show up in metrics all the time, except for advanced stuff team-wise. But he never was able to do that before. So if you look at the totality of his improvement, I don't think he's ever been – I think he's without question deserving. If you took away positions and just did an all-NBA team, he without question in my mind would be on the all-NBA team. He may not make first team or even second team because of Jokic and Embiid, but he's a first team player if you took away position, and that is not something he's ever been before.
I should have seen Rudy Gobert coming. I went back and forth on whether this is his career year. I think it's very close. The best improvement that he's made, I think, from those prior years is his ability to defend in space. He is more comfortable switching, doing those things. I think that's a big plus. I just think, he's still a great finisher, still does a lot of these things. I just think 2 years ago was his peak year. He was obviously an awesome defensive player then also. Maybe not quite as versatile, but I think a little underrated in his versatility, ability to defend in space. And he was just in a league where the offense hadn't quite exploded as much. He was about the same as somebody who was a finisher, maybe a little bit more prolific of a dunker, a little younger, maybe slightly more athletic. I loved how you put it earlier, how it's kind of that race to figure out the game before your athleticism declines. And he's right in that sweet spot. I think he was in that sweet spot or so, a little more athletic 2 years ago, a little smarter now, similar levels. I could go back and forth on whether he's better now or 2 years ago, but I think I favor 2 years ago just ever so slightly, which didn't have him on my list. But if he were on my list, absolutely deserving. Did not see this coming at all his rookie year. I thought he made his biggest jump into his second year. All of a sudden, he became a really good defender. He's been such an underrated offensive player. I think he made the one big jump into his second year, but continued to improve. And, because he's hovering around this level, I wouldn't be surprised if we did this list again next year, where I said, he's slightly better than he was in that 2019 season. Because right now, I think only have him slightly below. But if not, he would definitely be challenging for my number one pick.
That's always the, I'm glad that you see it. You could argue that he was metrically better in a previous season, but this, according to the advanced stats we have, this is the best defensive season of his career when we're facing the best offensive season of all time. So that's something I factored in. He's anchoring the best team in the world has all season. He's played pretty, I think he's missed maybe one game so far. So durability's there. Mm-hmm. He's always been a relatively durable player. Not always, but mostly. I think last year he played, 68 of 72 games. And 1 year, I think at 17, he played maybe 80 or 81 games out of 82. But that defensive jump. And then the other thing, as I said, so when you had the 7 seconds or left Phoenix, 7 seconds or left Phoenix Suns, Amari Stoudemire was the best in the world at the early release pick and roll, short roll, we call it, where Nash would come off a ball screen that hedge hard. He would hit Amari with a quick pocket pass to 16 feet. And Amari could navigate down the middle of the court with bodies everywhere and score. But Amari is 6'10". And maybe as athletic a 6'10" center as we've seen in forever. He's from this area. I've known him. I've watched him since he was 15. He's incredible. Rudy's 7'1", whatever. And not only does Rudy do that better than ever before and craft finish, as I said, the kick out corner threes or they throw to the opposite. If he's maybe 5 feet removed from the center line on the right side, he'll find the left corner shooter or vice versa. That's just new to him. It's not something he's typically done before. It's not like he's a great passer, but their game has changed some and they've allowed, because they shoot more threes than ever, and it's allowed him to advance that part of his game. He also knows his role well. That's kind of always been the case. But the fact that he's carrying – so just think about this one. What he's doing defensively in the best offensive season of all time with no preparation between games because there's no time to practice, and yet he's still doing about what he's always done on the offensive glass. I'm telling you, he goes after everything. He goes after almost every offensive rebound. He really goes after everyone he could go after. He doesn't go after some that he shouldn't because he might foul. He's always a threat to keep a ball alive. That motor is huge, and it's a big part of who they are because it buys more possessions for their team, and they're a top five offense too. And so that's a killer. There's a reason why they're likely going to be the one seed overall. They're not there yet, despite missing their all-star backcourt for a while now. And again, 36 games combined, and I doubt either will play tomorrow night or if whatever this runs Wednesday night. So it'll be 38 games that they've missed. That's why I give Rudy that. I just think it's his best year that way.
For a long time, I used what I called the Draymond Green Klay Thompson test to kind of assess how somebody watches basketball. And if you thought Klay Thompson was better than Draymond Green, that told me something about how you watch the game. Appreciating.
I agree with you.
I think I need, and I've been looking for a more modern version because Klay Thompson's out. Look, Draymond Green has slipped some, and maybe you're somebody like me, and it sounds like you too, who really appreciate Draymond Green, but also recognizes that he slipped, and that makes it a little tougher to to talk about. Maybe my new test needs to be the Rudy Gobert Donovan Mitchell test. Because when people bring up Donovan Mitchell as the MVP candidate, Donovan Mitchell is the best player on the Jazz, it tells me something about how you're watching the game. Rudy Gobert is so good. He is the Jazz's best player. It is not close. At some point, Donovan Mitchell will surpass him. Donovan Mitchell's younger, has a higher upside, in especially offensively. But Rudy Gobert is so, so good right now.
Amazing.
And I think we need to know just slightly more about his rookie year. He did not show this. He didn't look like somebody who necessarily was going to stick in the league.
Well, here's what I would say about that, and then we'll get to your number one. So I saw on the defense, not on the offense. I don't remember half the stuff that I tweet, if not 80% of the stuff I tweet. But his rookie season, he was at Summer League. I'm not even sure he had played a game yet in the NBA. And I tweeted something about how he's going to be the guy. Whoever listened to this, they can look it up. I don't remember exactly, but someone said this to me last year. I wrote that if Team USA is ever going to lose, it's going to be a team led by someone like Rudy Gobert, because he can be that kind of game changer defensively. So what he's doing offensively is remarkable for that. And he used to not have good hands. Like, there's just so many moving parts to a guy 7'1" with a 7'6" wingspan. Of course, his hands aren't as good as someone else's. He's trying to catch the ball way farther away from his body than the average person is. It's hard to do. His development overall offensively and his competitiveness. I don't know that I saw him as competitive as I must have liked what he did defensively to write what I wrote, but what he's doing now. And yes, you're right on Donovan. Donovan's an amazing player. Yeah. And they need him at full strength or they will not win a championship. And I think they can win a championship. Donovan has to be. He's got to be back to the guy he was against the Nuggets. He's got to be back to the guy he was in much of the year. But he's been out for a while now. And I don't know if he's going to come back at all before the playoffs. So there's a real concern. But you're right. Rudy Gobert is, without question, the MVP. And like I said, he is deserving of MVP votes. I'd have in my top five. They're dominating the league, Dan. Dominating the league. With all these injuries, and they've not been the most injured team. But Royce O'Neal started the year. He had COVID protocols. The starting backcourt, both all-stars, have been out for a while now and have missed plenty of games. Their adjusted margin is the best in the league. It's near Warrior levels, right? They're doing the league what the Warriors did in years they won championships. That's how much farther they are above everybody else. For someone to be the best player and not be an MVP candidate is weird to me, which is why he's on my top five. He's why he's my number one. He's an MVP-level player, and that has never been the case before in his career.
When I compare him to the 2 years ago, I think his surrounding offensive talent's much better. That's why I'm a little down, because he's like, oh, producing a similar offensive level or offensive numbers at least. But it's a better environment, not just league-wide, but on his team to do it. Better spacing, better playmakers around him. But defensively, he is the center of everything, right? I mean, they've geared this team toward – okay, well, we can take steps back defensively in other positions because we have Rudy Gobert cleaning up everything.
Yeah, you got to – I mean, again, watching them so much, they're better defenders, and there's a few. They do a very good job. Royce O'Neal was amazing on Steph Curry last night. George Niang is actually a high-level defender off the bench. They stay connected to their guys. So you can't get blown by and then expect Rudy to help you because he'll foul. In fact, Rudy's gotten so smart – he won't even try to block your shot. If it's a blow by, unless he has the perfect angle and you're really short and small and don't jump well, he's not even going to contest because he'll foul you. But if you stay connected, and therefore the offensive player has to be anxious about how am I going to score over the guy that's guarding me, and now Rudy's coming as the second guy, well, that's why they're so amazing on defense. Because guys like Royce in the first group, George in the second group, they do a great job of staying connected to guys and taking away what that player most wants. And now they play right into Rudy's hands, and that combination's a killer.
All right, my number one, and I'll explain a little bit, and then you can tell me why he didn't even crack your top five, is Jimmy Butler. Now, Butler didn't play a lot as a rookie. The Bulls had a good and deep team. He couldn't really crack the regular rotation. When he got in, he looked okay, but very limited. Defensive specialist, hustle player. Now he's one of the best players in the league. Had an awesome run through the playoffs last year. I think having the best season of his career this year, even though he missed time with coronavirus, he's been awesome when he's been in. The Heat are a completely different team with him. He is a go-to offensive player even more than he's ever been. It was when he was still playing with Derrick Rose, he called himself a point guard. He looks more the part even now, doing so much to distribute. Awesome defensive player, on ball, off ball. I think just one of the very best players in the league. Somebody who, even though he's missed so many games, deserves all NBA consideration. And for him to get to this point after not even being in the rotation as a rookie, maybe he would have been in rotation on some other teams. I get that. But to not even be rotation caliber as a rookie, to be at this level now, to have such an expanded offensive game, to be a go-to player, to be somebody who can go toe-to-toe with LeBron James in the finals, that to me is the player who's improved the most throughout his career. All right, defend yourself. Why is he not even in your top five?
Well, it's the same thing you said with some of the other guys that I mentioned. I thought you could easily argue his career year was his last year in Chicago.
Yep.
Where he was just this. I love Jimmy Butler. Yeah. What's not to love about the guy? And maybe this is his best all around year. Maybe so. It was too close to call, and so he didn't make it. But there are metrics that say that this is not his best season. There are metrics that say that this is. And so it's just selective. He definitely has a different role on this team, and context does matter. So, I hear it. But his last year in Chicago, I think he had, 18 plus earned wins. This year he's not even at 11. He played 76 games, I think maybe 75 games that last year in Chicago, and he's at 50 of 68 or so now for Miami. So those are reasons why, but your argument's great. He's deserving. We didn't miss, there's no one you said that I'm like, damn, what are you doing? No, when I look at all MVP, all NBA, I did this list the other day for our podcast, Bring It In. I did it yesterday with Henry Abbott. Or I did it Friday maybe with Gerard Hector. I look at how many games you played first. And so only if we can't find 5 or 10 or 15 players that have played, in this case, let's say 60 plus games, will I go down to the guys that have played 50 plus, and that's him right now. So he'll probably end up making, if I do a third team, he'd make it. But it's close. You want to say it's a career year, okay. But he's definitely. What do you think he's? What is he better at now? What is the one thing? Would you say passing? Is it his overall playmaking? Would you say that's where he's best compared to previous years?
Yeah, I would. Remarkable because you would have thought, okay, well the place for him to improve is 3-point shooting, right? Like that's like the clear thing he needed to work on.
Right.
And part of this, I think, goes hand in hand with passing. Maybe I go even a little broader with just making smart plays, right? There are very few to zero rookies. Who just make a lot of smart plays. Jimmy Butler makes all the smart plays. And part of that is realizing, I'm not that great of a three-point shooter. I'm not going to take him. His three-point rate is so low now, but he still makes it work. And, I think he needs to have the ball in his hands to do that more. If he were playing more off the ball, his lack of spacing through three-point shooting would be a bigger problem. But I think he's better in every way. But I do think, yes, that decision-making, especially through passing, is where he's made the biggest jump. Passing is definitely where he's made the biggest jump from that 2017 season. But just from the beginning of his career, I just think it's overall just being such a smart player on both ends, always being in the right spot, always making the right plays. I think that story about him at the Timberwolves practice, it's one of my favorite stories. I don't know how much of this is true, how much of this is legend, but the idea that he took the third teamers and beat the first teamers while barely shooting, I think that got lost a little bit. He barely shot because he knows how to control the game
right
without taking a lot of shots. His competitiveness, all the things he does. Yeah, I got no problem if you want to say his 2017 season was better. That's the best defense you could have for not having Jimmy Butler on this list, because he has improved a ton from his rookie year. In that 17 season, I do remember writing about, he looks like a superstar. He was a star before that. It was in his first All-Star season. But he's a superstar level. And it was near that the last few years, but I think he's back to that. Now, I'm with you that games played matters, availability matters. I think he's just been that good this season where, yeah, definitely his overall impact was higher in 2017 because he played so many games. But I think his per-minute impact, his skills are higher, and so if I'm trying to balance those two, I am going to go with this year. Was there anybody who we didn't mention, who you wanted to mention as somebody you looked as honorable mention or drew strong consideration for your top five?
Well, I did this with a podcast that was Zach Lowe recently. In the last 2 years, my most improved player, last year was Luka Doncic, this year is Zion Williamson, because the jump to get into the elite of the elite of elite, like best five, six, like Luka's my first team NBA player. Zion would be maybe my first guy in the second team because of the minutes, the games he's played, whatever. That's so hard to do. It's you know, Ben Simmons is more common. In other words, a guy that's an all-star that's been about the same almost since year one or two, and in Ben's case, you know, he missed a year, that's more common than the gigantic jump from being good to as good as you're going to find in the game. It's hard to do. There's lots of top five picks every year. They don't all become top five players. They almost none of them do. And so for Luka and Zion to do that is amazing. It's just we have to respect that isn't common, right? Karl-Anthony Towns is a tremendous talent. He has never been close to making an All-NBA team. We can go down the list of former number one picks, or in Luka's case, you know, top three, top four picks. It's just really special when you make that kind of jump. So I don't think this is a career year for him. I haven't actually looked to see what his career was, but I respect what Kyrie Irving's doing in Brooklyn. It isn't easy to do what he's doing. It's probably not a career year. Boston, he was very good, but it's been, you know, again, context counts. The challenge of managing what he's having to manage with that team and the new players he's playing with, he's had a tremendous season. I give him a lot of credit for that.
I wrote a little bit more. By the time this podcast is posted, you'll be able to see it at NBC Sports. I ranked the top 10 of players I'd have for this award. Okay. So I want to get some different types of players. And I think, like we talked about, once you get to the top five, it's going to be more star-oriented. But if you get down to 10, maybe at least one or two guys who aren't stars but have improved a lot. And I want to do this. I want to rank these types of players every year because, I don't want to just have the debate of is he having a career year or not. Like, let's honor this guy in a different year. If we're doing this every year, we're going to catch those guys whenever you think their career years and reward them for their – and honor them and talk about them for their improvement. I really enjoyed doing this with you. You can follow David Thorpe on Twitter at Coach Thorpe. You can read his work, watch his work, listen to his work, great multimedia stuff at True Hoop. David, thanks for coming on.
My pleasure. Look forward to reading your full article, and I'll be happy to come on again if you want.
Love to.